Attention contractors, on May 6th, you're invited to a free web class all about hiring. Look, there's no denying we're in a skilled labor shortage, and it feels impossible these days to hire good people. But I've conducted over 2,400 interviews for trades positions, and I'm telling you, this can be done. You're just kind of doing it wrong. So, if you want the best performing job ad templates contractors are using in 2025, some simple interview tactics that are going to double your show up rates, and some tips to become the only place in town that A players want to work, this web class is for you. May 6th, let's make it happen, and I'll see you there.
Welcome back to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. This is your host, Benji, and my guest on the show today is our very own coach, Ian Owerkirk. Ian coaches the highest number of businesses here at Breakthrough Academy, and as such, he has a massive sample size and a very unique perspective on what works and what doesn't when it comes to growing your construction or trades business. Today, we talk about the contractor growth method, that's Breakthrough Academy's six-part business system, from the lens of a coach who has implemented it literally hundreds of times. I hope you get a ton of wisdom and insight from this conversation with Ian. And without further ado, let's dive in. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Coach Ian, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, brother. It's good to be here again.
It's good to see you. I like the camo. I can barely even see your upper body here.
Am I blending in?
You're blending right in.
Good.
Okay, so we're going to talk today about the contractor growth method, but I think the more interesting part of this is your philosophy on this and how you implement this with the members that you coach. Now, for you listening, a very salient and obvious question is, what the heck is the contractor growth method? So I'm going to set it up this way, and then I'm going to dish to you in a second. The contractor growth method is the framework, the business system that we implement here at Breakthrough Academy. So you've noticed, if you run a construction business, a landscaping business, a painting company, roofing, what have you, that your business operates a little bit differently than probably a lot of your entrepreneurial friends. We get that at Breakthrough Academy, and we've developed a business system. There's business systems out there in the world. You can think of like EOS. You can think of a selling system like Sandler Sales. There are these business frameworks that you learn about and work to varying degrees of effectiveness for your business. We have learned over the last 10 years that being a contractor, you just have a different set of needs and your business is shaped differently and functions differently than a lot of other industries. And therefore, we've developed a framework that we know works. When people come and they join Breakthrough Academy, we have a whole process and we onboard them and they get paired up with a coach. But the goal over the years that they spend with us is to implement the contractor growth method in its entirety. So before we get to Ian and his philosophy on this, I think it's really important that we just set it up this way and you know explicitly what we're talking about. The contractor growth method is made up of six core disciplines, six. In no particular order, they are as follows. Financial controls. Your business needs to have systems to track your numbers and data when it comes to making money. Do you understand your gross profit? Do you understand your net profit? Do you understand what you're spending on overhead on a monthly basis? You need to have a very detailed financial picture or you're going to go bankrupt. And we just see that time and time and time again. The second part, defined roles. When you don't have clear roles that are supported by job descriptions and reinforced through accountability systems, what you end up with is a business where everyone is tripping over each other. People are confused about whose responsibility is whose. In some areas of the business, you have the duplication of tasks and two people doing what could be done by one person. And in other areas, you have balls being dropped because nobody is doing what somebody should be doing. So we need to define roles really clearly for the whole organization, develop an org chart, employment agreements for everyone, GSR meetings for everyone so they're held accountable to those, Hiring and training, another discipline within the contractor growth method. It's very difficult to build the business of your dreams with B players. And if you've run a business for a while, you definitely have felt what that feels like when you're just scraping the bottom of the barrel. It feels like nobody's good. We need to build an employer brand. We need to get a little bit more active with your recruitment strategies. There are ways to get the best people in your market applying to your business, believe it or not. And we teach that really, really well and implement systems around it. Project delivery. How do we actually get the jobs that we sell done? There's a project management component. There's an estimation component. There's a quality control component to make sure that we're not going back and doing warranty work later on. You deliver the work that you sell. And so there needs to be airtight SOPs for all of that as well. Optimize sales and marketing. That's the fifth. Again, I'm not really going in any particular order. I'm just sort of rattling these off as they come to me. Optimize sales and marketing, let's say, is the fifth. You need to have a strong brand, great marketing strategies, a consultative multi-step sales process that builds trust with the customer, understands their needs, develops an accurate estimate, builds an accurate price or multiple prices if you're doing kind of a good, better, best option, and you're able to sell revenue in a predictable way to the marketplace. And then lastly, would just be strategy and goal setting. We need to have an overarching vision for where the company is going. What's the five-year BHAG? Can we break that down into an annual goal that we're excited about and the team is excited about and they understand very clearly? Can we break that down into manageable chunks like quarterly rocks? And then can we dial that all the way down into our weekly schedule week to week so that we're focused on the right things? So financial controls, defined roles, hiring and training, project delivery, optimized sales and marketing, strategy and goal setting. That is the contractor growth method. That's what we do at Breakthrough Academy. If those sound like things that your businesses need, that's because we've done this a lot and you can learn more about us on our website. That's the setup, Ian. I'm being long-winded. Tell me a little bit about your philosophy on these six core areas, because that to a lot of listeners is going to sound like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And, you know, I kind of talked about this a little bit last time, but I've seen this done a lot. I've seen hundreds of business owners come through BTA, try different things, make mistakes. I make mistakes. We learn together. Some people just figure it out faster than others. And there's definitely patterns to be noticed between the people who have success faster and the ones who sort of struggle or stagnate or return to certain things, and those sorts of things just start to emerge over time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've been at this for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because there's sort of, you know, one of the things my wife is always trying to get drill into my mind is that duality exists. Okay. So we can have these different situational challenges come up all the time. The things we can't predict and plan for, the things that are problematic in the moment, in the season,
yeah,
you know, these things are constantly coming up, and that's where we'll come in with some one-on-one coaching or some masterminding in the BTA method of solving these problems. So these things are happening all the time. These different things are popping up as problems. Okay. At the same time, you kind of have these six disciplines or these six areas of mastery or at least proficiency that are things that you need to at least get to a certain level, I think, before you can really move on to the next sort of major segment. So I think these two things are happening simultaneously.
Yeah, and maybe to make this a more engaging concept versus just like this sort of never-ending list of work, we have tried to, in our sort of program and through the coaches we work with, through the curriculum and the content that we've built, we've tried to, and I would encourage you to listen to what follows as like, we've tried to gamify it. These are different areas where you can score and rank and get better at over time. Nobody is going to be perfect in all of them. Everyone is going to come into the program with different strengths and weaknesses. But what I think is interesting about your vantage point in this conversation that we're going to have is that you have such a large sample size and have worked on these six core disciplines with so many businesses, so many reps, that you understand what high performers do in these six buckets. That's maybe a good way to think of it. And what low performers do in these six buckets. And we can kind of, I think, you don't even have to be into Breakthrough Academy to get a whole bunch from this conversation and see what high performers do in these categories versus low performers. I think that's a very good framing on this as we dive in. Now, you have this business book that you love, which is called Right Away and All at Once.
Greg Brenneman.
Okay.
It's one of the best business books that one's heard of.
I've not read it. I haven't even heard of it, and I read quite a bit.
I know.
So why do you love this book?
I love this book, man, because just a really unique perspective. This guy's like the turnaround king, Greg Brenneman. High values, good dude, you know, farm boy like me. And he just comes into like big companies like Home Depot, airlines, like all kinds of different industries too. And he just like deals with it.
Yeah.
Turns it around.
Okay.
And, you know, it's been a while since I've read it, but what I, you know, took from that, and I still like think is very applicable, is, you know, in business, the reason it's so hard is, right, it's not like step one, check, step two, check, right? There's like all of these dualities and different things going on at once.
All the time.
Right away and all at once. It's all happening all the time. It's very dynamic. That's why owning a business is not easy.
Yeah.
Right? We all know that.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And if it was easy, everyone would do it, but it's not, right? There's a lot going on and a lot of problems we need to solve and a lot of things we need to deploy resources towards at all times.
At all times. This is the thing that I really like about your approach is it's very nuanced and it's very reality-based. You know, we make a podcast and I'm the first person as I've done 200 episodes. I want to admit to the audience, I know that we often, because it's our job to do this, we want to communicate clearly, want to simplify concepts. We often make things sound a lot easier than they are, mm-hmm. right? That's what you do in the content game. You framework things, you step things, you turn things into listicles. I know as much as anyone that the actual lived experience and the reality of the business owner is not like, oh, my three-step process to automate, delegate, dominate, problem solve my business is great. That's not reality. The reality is you are playing—
It's much more dynamic.
You are playing a never-ending game of whack-a-mole. You've been to the arcades, you get the little hammer and there's these things popping up and you're trying to whack them. Sometimes two come up at once. You have to whack both, right? The problem with overly simplistic frameworks and overly simplified black and white thinking on this is like you can't play whack-a-mole and then just be like, I just want to really make sure this one hole is hammered. Like if you just go,
I'm gonna get this one really good.
So you're sitting there and you're looking at this one hole waiting for it to pop up and you whack it, but you're missing all the points, bing, 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 bing going on around you. And so I just use that visual to say, listen, if it feels like you're spinning a bunch of plates, playing a never-ending game of whack-a-mole, wearing a million hats, there's like a million adages and metaphors that we've come up with over the years to describe this. That is your job. And whether you realized it or not, when you started your business, that's what you signed up for. And so what I like about your approach to this and what we're going to talk about today is this idea that you coach people to avoid the tunnel vision thinking of like, well, let's just book a day and we're going to get all of the sales stuff figured out. Or we're going to book a week and we're going to get all of our production issues sorted out. It just doesn't work like that. You are working at all of these things simultaneously in perpetuity until you get to a point, a critical mass of systemization and implementation where there is kind of a business system here that runs for the most, like not saying ever without you, but you have a level of stability, a threshold of stability that you can get to. But up until that point, it's just a never-ending symphony of a note here, an instrument there, a chord there. And that's what you signed up for. And I really like your approach to that because it's very reality-based.
It is, man. There's so much in being a business owner that is situational. It's dynamic. There's so much going on all the time. And it is kind of a game of right away and all at once.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the way I like to think about it, you know, in our case, we've got six buckets or disciplines, right?
Yeah.
So at all times, let's say each of these buckets is getting 15% of your
attention,
resources, investment, effort.
Yeah.
Each one. is getting 15%. And then there's one of the six that's getting 25%. So it's just getting a little bit extra. A little bit extra. And then you work that one to where it needs to be. You kind of like get that to the most optimal you can get it right now, then the next. And I think that there is, in the meantime, there's all this stuff that comes up, all this stuff you couldn't predict. Oh, that guy quit, or oh, that project was a disaster. You know, all these things come up. That's where it's so dynamic and complex, right? And I think that there is, at the same time, you know, a general order that you do want to master these different buckets. Because what I've noticed is if you don't, at a certain point, no matter what you're working on, you're always going to have to go back to that one to get it figured out and get it to where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Not to perfection, mm-hmm. right? Progress over perfection. But get it to where at least it's sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the next.
So. You have said this to me all the time, that we are in the momentum business. What does that mean?
So when we are coaching and training and working with business owners, we are always trying to get wins, right? Little wins, big wins, I don't care, wins, you know? And if you aren't experiencing those wins, and if we're not getting them in the right way or in the right areas, you're not feeling them, that's where we got to change things up. Uh-huh. And if we are not impacting what's problematic for you, that's where you know, we have to adjust, we have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nuance, right? Is figuring out where the wins need to be for you. And also at the same time, what, you know, you're still having gaps in,
mm-hmm.
in the sort of one through six that kind of keeps having you kind of come back to that problem before you can move on to solving other problems.
And adopting a mindset that it's never finished.
It's never finished.
You're just doing it at different scales.
We're not in the completion business,
yeah.
right? We're not in the completion business. It's just, we're always pursuing progress
right.
over perfection.
Right. Yeah. So those are really important concepts to kind of frame this up. Now we're going to go through best practices and probably some worst practices for each, but I think those are some really good things to say at the beginning here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk. So, and okay, we're going to do, you actually have an order. This is interesting. You actually think that there's a way to prioritize these six based on your few hundred repetitions with businesses that you've worked with. It's obvious to you that some of these six buckets maybe rank order in terms of importance. Not always, but in general, you see some patterns there.
Totally.
So which one do you want to start with?
So I think, because I've seen it many times now, I think that if you are going to have success in business and reclaim time and profit and get to where you want to be, to get to the lifestyle you want, I think that there is an order of prioritization here.
Okay.
You know, if we say we're in the momentum business, we're also in the prioritization business. Like trying to figure out what should matter to you now is quite a complex game, right? But in general, there are patterns, I think.
Okay.
And to me, if you do not figure out strategy and goal setting, time and priority management, if you do not figure that out, you're never going to move forward.
That's at the top of the list.
Not sustainably.
For you. That's at the top.
That's at the top of the list. Because
why?
The best example I can give you on this is a great guy, and one of my, you know, we've worked together for a long time. His name's Sam Bigelow. Okay, and for, man, I bet you a couple of years, right? We would keep going through this same pattern where he would keep making progress. But every time I would see him, he looked like death. Like he just looked, I was like, man, are you okay? Are you going to make it? And, you know, we'd work on certain things and it just, you know, we would get some little bit of progress. And then it was like, you know, one step forward, two steps back, like, you know, we'd always be moving and putting in the effort and the energy. And then we'd always just kind of like, we would never really break through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even mean to do that, but.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And then finally, I think, you know, this was a couple years in. We just took it right back to like the, you know, to that nitty gritty of time and priority management. Mm-hmm. We just peeled it. You know what? screw SOPs. Don't even think about this. Don't worry about that. Let's just get your time figured out here, man, because this is not working, right? And we've, you know, it's hard because you think it's working, but you're not there every day, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of like you're meeting with someone every few weeks, and you're like, you know, and then so we just peeled it right all the way back, and we just rebuilt. He just all he did for the first few weeks was just map out what he was doing in reverse because he was so scattered that a lot of it just, he wasn't even sure what he was doing in his day to day. It was just all over the place. He was running and always tired and just off his feet, like just burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took it right back. We actually like audited his time in reverse for a while.
Meaning
that at the end of a day, rather than like, oh, let's plan the day and build our forecast for this week or this month. And we actually had to go in reverse and we just went, okay, what are you doing in a day? What are the patterns here? Mm. What are the things you're noticing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. We've established that. Now let's put in the middle of your day, self-care time. So he just carved it out middle of the day. He'd go to the gym. He'd swim. He'd do all the stuff that just got him energy, made him feel good. We put it actually in the middle of the day so that he couldn't get distracted in either in any direction.
Couldn't say he's too tired. Yeah.
And so we peeled it all the way back to there. We just said, let's just block the personal care time first. Yeah. And then we'll introduce the other patterns. And it took a while. It took a while to rebuild his priorities, his schedule, his blocks. But since he did that, and that's him being disciplined. Mm-hmm. Discipline equals freedom. Mm-hmm. Like we always say it, but you know, this is one of the guys who really showed me it, right? When he got that discipline in there, when he organized his time again, when he put himself first, you know, a lot of people worry in that moment, well, I'm not going to have enough time for all this and this and that. And since that moment, his business has basically tripled in every way.
Yeah. When we look at strategy and goal setting, just in terms of like what those terms mean, you're talking more about block scheduling right now and sort of getting someone out of a very situational crisis in the instance of Sam. But when we talk about strategy and goal setting, you put that right at the top of the list in terms of importance. Why is that there and not one of the other, you know, five things I mentioned? Why is it that and not defined roles or not project delivery? Like, why is strategy and goal setting above everything else?
I think that as a business owner, you're constantly in this back and forth between, well, I need to work on the business more. I know this. I've been hearing this for years, right? I need to work on the business more, but I have no time to work on the business more, right? And so carving out that time, if you're not used to it, is really challenging for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so when you audit your time, like I gave an extreme example with Sam, and I think he's done a great job turning it around. But when you are auditing your time, which you should do regularly, right? And you are saying, well, you know, and you're looking at all these tasks that you do, and you ask yourself two questions like, who, not how? Who could do this instead of me? Who could do it better than me? Who could do it faster than me?
Yeah.
Right? When you ask those questions, that's when you start carving back time. When you ask yourself, how can I work smarter at this and not so hard on this? When you ask those two questions about everything you do, you start to get things done through other people, through other solutions, rather than just you working harder all the time, which is kind of the default for a lot of entrepreneurs, right?
When you look at the other really high performers in this bucket, you mentioned a time audit and asking those two questions. What else do you see them do?
Usually, if they're having problems here, it's you know, it's kind of like the two ends of the spectrum, I think, when it comes to time, right? If we think of time as a funnel and the biggest picture is at the top and we're whittling our way down to our day-to-day, right? Usually, if people are having problems here, it's because one of the ends of the funnel is not well-developed enough.
Like the high-level strategy.
The high-level.
What are we doing and why?
Vision and goals.
Yeah.
Like,
or the bottom of the funnel being like how I literally spend the hours day to day.
Exactly.
Okay.
So usually, I mean, obviously there's a lot in the middle, but usually it's one of those two at the root of the problem. So if you've done a great job thinking about where you're going, where you're taking this thing in 3 to 5 years, what you want out of life and lifestyle, if you've done a good job of that, everything in the middle is pretty like
secondary.
Like, it's secondary. You will get it done because your mind's eye has grabbed a hold of that vision so hard you can't imagine anything else. And for some people, that takes 5 minutes. I know exactly what I want. For other people, that takes
forever.
5 months.
Yeah.
5 months of like talking to their spouse and thinking about it and real, like it's a grind.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've seen people, it takes 5 months to figure that out.
Yeah.
And a lot of conversations and a lot of back and forth. If that's not how you're wired, it's pretty hard for you to think about, you know, for your mind to capture that and for you to just grab onto it. And, you know, it's real to you. And yeah. If you have done a good job of that, you know, getting up in the morning, getting all done, all the things is a joy, right?
You talk a lot about like routines and being very considerate about optimal time zones in the day, people putting the right things at the right times in their schedule. Seems like a minor detail. You say it isn't.
Man, like this is a pattern that you see all the time. Like when people want to work on the business, they put that work on the business time, afternoons, evenings, kind of like squeeze it in, right? But that's not when I do my best work on the business. I don't think that's where most people are the sharpest when it comes to like implementation and that, you know, work on the business stuff. That's not the best time. So, you know, figuring out what your patterns are when you're the highest energy for certain activities and then putting those into those blocks, getting organized, sticking to those routines, holding boundaries. Mm. Great book. Onto those blocks you've set aside, those things that you say you're going to do, that's when you start to see people really like make some moves, gain some momentum.
And that's case by case. Some people have energy at different times. You're just saying, hey, think about when you do the best work and put the most important
in
stuff
these
there.
Areas. Yeah. If your best time to build out some different procedures is first thing in the morning, do them then, right? Mm-hmm. Figuring out these patterns it takes some time sometimes. It's also why self-care is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, figuring out how to like, you know, build the energy into your routines is something that a lot of us aren't good at yet. We're always working at it, so.
What's the next on the list? What's sort of the next on the priority?
I would say the next one is financial controls, because if you kind of figured out how to organize your time better, you've figured out a scheduling tool that makes sense, you've got some good rhythms and routines, you got good boundaries on your time, right? You can get a lot of things done, right? That is where you can work on, say, financial controls. That's where you can work on defined roles, all these other things. None of those things happen unless you've carved out the time to work on them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
100%.
Unless you've built the strategy around the time to make it happen. Okay? So that's why it's number one. Number two, then, is actually making sure that you're doing all this work for a profit. Because I find a lot of times people are grinding. They're grinding hard and they're trying to do all the things right. And they're, you know, trying to hit these sales targets and make sure they get this much revenue produced and all this stuff's happening, but they're doing it without actually having a solid understanding of their numbers and especially their pricing.
When we talk about financial controls, it's a bit of an umbrella term that captures a few different systems. As a coach, what do you think are the most foundational ones? If someone was coming to you and they're sort of saying, I don't know my numbers at all, where would you start to attack that problem from a systems mindset? What would you put in place first?
Well, the first thing I'd suggest is making sure that you're actually budgeting enough to pay for your financial controls. And generally, I'd suggest that's 1-2% of revenue. Is going like revenue, that's a big number. 1-2% of revenue is going to financial controls. So that's your accountant, your bookkeeper, maybe some of your office manager's involvement, maybe, you know, QuickBooks, all these things that...
Some software tools.
Software tools, all of that, okay? So I'd make sure the investment's there, first of all. And then the second part that's really challenging is making sure you have the right specialists actually working on this for you.
Say more about that.
So, man, this accounting, bookkeeping world is kind of like the medical field. Like, there's so many specializations, so many different areas that people are good at. And they kind of all say they're good at most of them. But there really are specialists in different forms of accounting, different companies, different service offerings, right? There's a lot of specialization in this area. And if you don't have somebody who's, you know, really strong and understands your business and who's, you know, bookkeeping effectively, the numbers won't be accurate. The categorization won't be accurate. It's just going to be a battle.
So in my mind, like what we teach when we talk about this, I think of it like an annual budget sort of is one tool, a job costing system so you can actually track your project by project profitability is another tool. An overhead tracker, I would say, important, but maybe less important than those first two. Dialing in your standardized estimating and pricing strategy would be a big one. Do you want to maybe elaborate on that?
So one of the people that I've seen do this the best, and you've had him on here, the most profitable general contracting business I've ever seen. And, you know, Ian Kent is that guy, and I think he's done an amazing job of this. Mm-hmm. Like, he understands his costing. He understands how to build profitability. He also understands how to find profit where other people don't see it. And I think that's because...
What does he do differently?
I think his estimating is extremely strong. And I think that, you know, he manages costs against that estimate very regularly. So he's got his work in progress accounting systems dialed in. He's got Builder, Trend, and QuickBooks like synced so well. Mm-hmm. He says that Builder, Trend is a slave to QuickBooks.
Right.
And he, like, you know, he's got that so well dialed in. The money is all, you know, he's figured it out, and he's priced accurately. And I think that's one of the biggest things that really affects this industry, man, is pricing. Like, I've often had this thought that wouldn't it be amazing if we just all just kind of got on the same page here and just started pricing the same way?
Why do you think that's such a, it seems like an incredibly obvious thing, and yet it's very, very widespread that it's not done well. People are ballparking it. They're winging it. Maybe they're not ballparking it. They're using a tool, but that tool doesn't get updated regularly enough, or the person actually using the tool isn't trained well enough. You would think that getting your unit economics right, drinking a can of pop, like, this business is not, like, they know how much it costs to make, and they know what it costs to get it to the retailer, and there's a margin for them, there's a margin for this other, like, this is a very, very dialed in, you know, product that has room for everyone to make money, particularly Montpellier in this example. Why is that not done in this space so often?
I think because there's a low barrier to entry in many cases, right? So there's a lot of small competitors who are trying to make a living, and, you know, their overhead is very, very different from larger companies, right? It's pretty rare, you know, in a lot of industries that you have, you know, these really, really tiny competitors who can be so impactful on the pricing of the entire industry, right?
There's not that many industries that are as fragmented as this one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's one of the big reasons. I think that for different reasons, different seasons, people take on different pricing strategies, right? Because feast or famine sometimes, winter, summer, people try to stay busy. So they slash at certain points of the year. All of this stuff is happening. So it's really, you know,
bit of
really
a crapshoot. There's environmental factors that you think contribute to
this.
It's not just people are, you know, being cavalier and dumb about it. They're kind of forced. Their hand is forced in many instances.
I don't think there's anyone out there like trying to lose sabotaging money. The industry. Yeah. It's just what happens.
That's well said. One thing that you talk a lot about is like really like learning your tools. There's a difference between paying for a subscription to QuickBooks and watching 10 hours of YouTube content and hiring a QuickBooks consultant and working with their customer support team. Can you just explain why you're so bullish on that idea?
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of tools out there. And some of them are great. Some of them still need work. One of my favorites that I've been learning about lately from Jeff and Neil at Knight. Shout out, guys. These guys, they've been working with it's called Creo. Hmm. And basically, they're like pretty advanced estimating software. They're out of Europe, actually. But that's just one of many, many tools out there. Right? That can help kind of standardize and get you good pricing. I think this is a lot of conversations too. You know, that's why I think like, you know, companies like VTA are great because, you know, people in different provinces and states and countries can talk about, guys, open the kimono here. Like, how are we pricing this? Mm-hmm. What have you learned about this? You know, that talking is really powerful, right? And I think when you talk about people getting together and formalizing their numbers, that helps a ton, right? I think, though, that when it comes to these tools, a lot of people have them, mm-hmm. and then they kind of like, you know, actually that happens with a lot of financial control, like human support, too. Well, bookkeepers know
what
they're doing.
We have a bookkeeper.
We have a bookkeeper. No problem. You know, every time I see someone get a new bookkeeper, it takes them like a few months before they're actually like, oh, this person actually now knows how I do things. And, you know, what I thought would be pretty standard, it's actually fairly specific to each business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have these experts and it takes a while for them to get really informed on your business. And then with these tools as well, right, you can have all these tools, but if you're not actually investing the time and energy to figure out how they can actually fully work for you, you're kind of wasting your time. Like you're kind of just putting a lot of money towards subscriptions. And if you're not actually utilizing all that's available to you, it's a common pattern. It really is. And I think that if you do a good job of learning the tools, because a whole bunch of people out there are using this tool and they all have their opinions and they're all giving their suggestions to the developers and the developers making the changes and making the improvements. And I'd be curious to know how many of the business owners actually are like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then they actually get into it. You know, I think a lot of them don't even know or they maybe scratch the surface of what their tools can do for
them.
There's
a lot of surface scratching. I mean, we're very lucky to be partnered with a lot of really great software businesses. Founders, dev teams, CTOs. We get the chance to kind of talk to them about this, customer support. This is anecdotal, but I've had many conversations with these businesses and I asked them on average, how much of your tool does the average user use? And it's like somewhere around 30%. They usually get the logins figured out. They kind of go through the introductory video. They learn how to do one feature, another feature, but there's this entire sort of second, third tier that they just never dip their toe into because they learn how to do the one thing that they made to subscribe for and they forget about all these other functions. And so I like that idea of being very, like paying for the thing is not enough to check the box. You have to learn how to use it and how to learn how to use it for your business. Then you actually have to teach your team how to use it so you're not in there every day and you can go do bigger and better things as well.
And I love paying other people to figure that out. I mean, as business owners,
what do you mean, like getting advice or paying like your team to?
I like to pay the team to figure a lot of that out.
Yeah.
I love, you know, the owner should have a good understanding, right? But some of the nitty gritty of getting it done, I think business owners, you know, if they can outsource get some support there, I think that's great.
What's next?
So the reason that this financial controls piece is so critical is because it doesn't matter what else is great. It doesn't matter what else. Everything else could be perfect. But if cash flow is tight, everything sucks, right? And so if you don't have, so again, like if you know, strategy and goal setting is getting 25% of our resources and effort and intentionality, we kind of get it to where we're sustainable and we're managing our time, we're organized, right? The next area that's getting 25%, I think, is these financial controls, because you can be doing everything else right, but if you're not profitable, not making as much money, not charging as much as you should, and cash flow is tight, or you end the year and you're not where you want it to be, everything else sucks, mm-hmm. right? So that's why financial controls, pricing, is, and all of those, that management is so critical. Then I think we go to marketing and sales. Optimized sales and marketing.
Okay. Say more about that.
So the businesses that grow the fastest, grow the best. This is one of the first lessons I learned in business too from our old friend Rodney. The best thing you can do at any point for your business at any time, if you're like, what do I do next? Usually one of the best things you can do is just line up some work. Now, it's a lot more complex than that, I think, because it's not, you know, you can line up work and it can be with the, you know, clients who you don't want to work for prices that are like not feeling worth the effort, right? You can fill your pipeline with a bunch of stuff that you're not really interested in, right? I think if you are doing this right, you are treating yourself as a sales and marketing organization.
You identify that way.
You identify that way, and then you have your service offering second. And every business who does that grows way faster, way more profitably, and way more sustainably, I think, than the ones who are slow to kind of pick up that mindset.
There would be a whole cohort of people who believe that, you know, marketing and selling yourself. There's a group of people that just almost brag about never doing any marketing.
I know.
So what's going on for those people? Is that just a small business mindset? Is that just a limiting self-belief? When people kind of maybe have judgment or critical about businesses that do a great job selling themselves, and there's almost like this purist... I think it's kind of bizarre. I don't think it's a very...
I don't know what it is, man. I know what you're talking about, though. Yeah. It's like, I don't know, if it's almost like arrogance or a sort of sense of pride, like, well, I'm just so good, I guess I don't need to
market. I don't need to market myself.
Yeah.
I don't need to sell that hard.
My reputation speaks for itself. I don't know. But to me, like, we really saw this during the COVID years, mm-hmm. when everyone was spending any money they had on the only place they could be, which was their homes or their properties. Right? And a lot of people were, oh, well, I guess I'm so busy. Why would I market?
Yeah.
You know, why would I promote my brand?
Yeah.
And those people, a lot of those people were in a really tough time in the last year or two when things tightened up and interest rates went up and people stopped spending.
So what does it look like to identify that mindset as a business owner? I'm a sales and marketing org first.
So
that happens to do roofing, that happens to do landscaping.
It's good you bring up roofing, because all the, you know, you notice the industry patterns between the different service offerings. The roofing and exteriors businesses, they're the strongest here, I think. That's why we oftentimes they're the ones with the biggest revenue growth and the ones who win the awards and all that stuff, because they're the ones who embrace this mindset. They spend the money. They think of themselves in sales and marketing organizations that do whatever. Mm-hmm. Those guys, they grow faster. They make more money, and it's usually more sustainable. And so a lot of times, you know, there is a sense of pride about keeping this investment modest. And I don't know why, where that comes from.
Investment in what?
Investment in marketing and brand promotion.
Okay. What's modest? Give us some ranges.
Well, modest is basically nothing.
Right.
and then we have the people. So I think, like, for our small, medium, average job size businesses, so any of our sub trades, companies like that, on, you know, a good sort of guide is 3-7% of revenue going to marketing, brand promotion.
Okay.
For our GCs, for general contractors, I think that's 2-4%. And if you do that investment consistently, year over year, no matter if you're flat out busy and you can't imagine taking on more work, if you are doing that, making that investment, you are going to be growing sustainably for a long, long time. And I think if we tighten that up or say, oh, we don't need to, that's when we see people really suffer when things get that tight.
So you're a very pro marketing and sales. You're a marketing and sales advocate with the businesses that you work with.
I am. Yes, I am. And I've seen it over and over again. And you know what? There's some things that are a little bit tricky about this. So I think that the larger your projects are, the more the investment should go towards business development, right? You just have Dave Note come in and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking like 5 hours a week if you're the owner, or, you know, and, you know, getting involved in these different associations and networking groups, and that's the best thing you can do. You know, you can pump a whole bunch of money into a whole bunch of other tactics and you won't see the results as much as you would just going and doing some of that business development. So there's different things that work for different segments in the construction world, I think. And then you also have this unique thing going on where you know, people get really fixated. I think you should track your spend and all of the results that come in your marketing channels. But I think that a lot of people sort of expect too much too fast, and they just write things off and say, oh, well, you know, that's not working for us. That was a waste of money. I don't think that any sort of brand promotion or marketing is necessarily a waste of money. It got you exposure. People need to see your brand many times before they move on it. There are things that are more effective than others and places we want to put money and not put money. But my favorite, you know, person to talk about this with is Kurt Jansen, the Beyond Group. Like, those guys have consistently made this investment for years now. They try different things. Some things stick, some things don't. But it's all brand promotion, it's all exposure, and that's all good things. And I think sometimes we get really, really fixated on all the KPIs and the returns on our spend. And sometimes it's just about people seeing your brand before they act on it.
Well, I obviously spend a lot of time thinking about brand and marketing communications and messaging and paid versus organic and all this stuff. And the reality is that a lot of the, as good as marketing tools have gotten, as good as KPI trackers have become, as so if you can use UTMs to track link clicks to understand the different traffic sources, where did this person come to our website from this blog or this blog or this podcast episode, right? As good as that stuff is, there's still quite a lot of the lead flow that you're going to get that you're just never going to know. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they saw an ad, they heard it on the radio, and they saw a billboard. Which one gets the credit?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this, it's, you know, there's a whole sort of industry around attribution and figuring out where your leads came from and how does that get tracked. And as good as all this stuff is, the point I'm making, there's a lot of it that you'll just never know. And it's sort of just like when I get sick and I have a really good cold, I take echinacea, I take this oregano oil, I take vitamin C, vitamin D, I do some zinc, throat lozenges, Ricola. Now, do I know which one makes me feel better? Not really, but I just throw the kitchen sink at it and it works. And I think, I'm not saying that you overdo it and blow your budget and spend 20% of your revenue on that, but people get way too tight with some of the, they kind of get private equity-esque, like where's the ROI on this? Can I track this down to the dollar and cent? And I think when it comes to brand building, there's quite a bit of it that you can't.
It's quite a bit of nuance there.
Yeah.
Right? And so a good example, good conversation I just had about this was with the New Beginnings Construction.
Mm.
Love those guys.
Toby.
Yes.
And Toby, what's his brother's name?
Toby and Bradley.
Bradley, okay.
Fantastic dudes. And, you know, well, I mean, did all this marketing investment, did it really help? And, you know, because they're attributing a lot of their success to storm that rolled through, right? And of course that helped, right? That provided a lot of revenue.
This, right? Like, there was storm damage and they storm were able damage, to do a bunch of insurance, right? Work. Yeah,
exactly. You know, but what, I mean, how do you quantify the fact that they had a billboard you know, that people saw 50 times going in and out of their neighborhood. And then when New Beginnings came to the door after that storm, they're like, oh yeah, these guys, right? How do you quantify that? That's really tough.
Yeah.
Right?
I love this whole idea of being a sales and marketing business first, and you just happen to do the work that you do as a secondary thing.
And a lot of people, they do kind of like cringe at that a little. Right?
I hear you.
Yeah, because that's not what I want to do. Like, I love my craft.
Yeah,
I love my craft, and you should.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a mindset, you know, more than anything.
You talk a lot. We've talked offline about this idea of you are always marketing and selling for basically two things. One is a customer funnel. The other is a talent funnel. So do you want to talk a little bit about where you see successful business owners apply the sales and marketing brain to their, I know we're going to get to hiring systems later, I think next, but there's a sales and marketing attitude that's applied to personnel as well.
Exactly. So when we talk about investing in brand, there's kind of two brands, right? There's the customer facing brand, and then there's the employer brand, right? So there's these two funnels or rivers kind of flowing simultaneously, mm-hmm. right? And as soon as, you know, this is the game that a lot of businesses are in this service-based world. It doesn't matter if it's construction or not, right? You're always kind of in between these two problems.
Yep.
We got too much work and not enough people, or not enough people and too much work, right?
Yeah.
And that is, it's a hard pendulum swing a lot of times. And it's like, oh God, well, we got to bring some people on, and then we bring the wrong people.
Yeah.
And what we want to see is a good investment simultaneously in both brands so that you've always got options. You've always got options, because when people have recurring personnel issues, it's usually because they can't fire someone because they have no one to turn to and they need a body right now. Or they just can't find anyone fast enough because, again, there are no options, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to invest in both of these channels simultaneously. Otherwise, you're just constantly pendulum swinging between those two. Too much work, not enough people. Too many people, not enough work. Mm-hmm. And you might never get it perfect,
mm-hmm.
right? But hopefully we get it at least sort of synchronized, right? Yeah,
as balanced as possible. That is a good segue into the next one on your list here, which is hiring and training. So you have this fourth out of six.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about why it's sort of ranked in this spot, and you know what good looks like here.
Yeah, and I think to me, it's like kind of a close right behind the sales, you know, if sales and marketing is getting 25% of our effort and we've got it sort of humming a little bit or sustainable, let's say, you know, then we're moving to this employer, this whole personnel side of things, hiring and training. And it's funny because this conversation comes up in every blueprint cohort. Now I've done, I don't know how many of these I've done now, but every blueprint cohort, these are the newest businesses in BTA. And we spend a little time, you know, we establish like, wow, you know, I'm in the people business. If I don't have the right people to build around, I'm never going to get the lifestyle, the profit, any of the things I want in my business. I'm never going to get it unless I have a really strong foundation of really good people. And then the follow-up question is, what's your investment in finding good people? And it is pretty sad.
Shockingly low.
Shockingly pathetic, actually. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, well, we do this and we kind of have this investment in our, you know, Indeed. I hate Indeed. But we do this and this, and that's about it. Like, there's just very modest investment in generating this talent pool.
What would you give as a healthy range for someone to spend on recruitment activities or hiring activities in general?
To me, it's like, you know, to me, if you're investing whatever percentage in, you know, your client-facing brand, it should be at least half also, you know, kind of directed at your employer brand. That's hard. So if you're spending, you know, 3%, sometimes people actually just kind of put it in as a part of it. Because once you get the tactics going, it can be sort of a part of your marketing investment. So, you know, that, to me, that's acceptable. It should at least be, call it a half, call it a third of the investment, right? If two thirds are going to that client facing brand, a third should be kind of towards the employer brand, but it's really nuanced, man. But I'll say this, what I love to see, the best businesses who do this really well, they have built out an entire process here. Okay. Ryan Lermit, I don't know if he just rebuilt. It's fantastic.
Tell me about it.
He's just got like all of this stuff to where he's got it all templated. He's got a lot of it digitized, and he's just kind of got this little, little collection of resumes that he can call whenever he needs, kind of thing.
What kind of stuff is automated in his case?
He's got like intake forms. He's got if this, then that. If they don't fill that in, then they're automatically disqualified. Like it's quite complex.
Yeah.
But he's done a beautiful job. He's got videos in it. He's got all these steps. And what he's done, I think, is, take this employer brand. You know, you've had specialists on here about that.
Yep.
And I think that if you do it well, you should own it. You know, it should be something that your business owns. And I love it when people put fantastic career pages on the website. They drive traffic to those career pages. They collect all of the applications. They do some more screening. And if you do a really good job of sort of building that funnel, eventually by the time someone makes it through some of the steps here, like you've got some pretty well-vetted candidates that you hadn't even talked to yet.
Yeah, we had Logan Campbell on.
Yes.
He does a fantastic job.
Probably even
everything.
Yeah.
It's very, very sophisticated.
Top notch.
Yeah. It's totally hands-off. It's done in groups and you know, his business is such that it demands it. This is a Airbnb cleaner who just has such intense sort of personnel needs.
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of people say at that point, well, that works for, sort of low skill potential candidates. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or labor level kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the guys who I think is like a great example of someone who's invested really well into his employer brand and as a general contractor is Mike Van Capelle, right? Blue Water. I mean, that guy, everybody always says, my employee market is different. I'm in a smaller town.
Yeah.
You know, he's in a smaller town. He's a GC. And he literally has like different candidates around the corner.
Lined up,
ready to work for him. And he's done some cool little creative things.
What has he done to do that?
He's got a great page that he drives traffic to.
Yeah.
It kind of makes him mad sometimes that it gets more traffic than his customer-facing pages. But, he gets a lot of traffic that way. The SEO favors this sort of exposure too, by the way. But when you start driving traffic to it, you get all these applications. He's made, how many carpenters have like really great resumes? They haven't filled out, they haven't built a resume in like 20 years sometimes. So, he made it so that they just submit some of their qualifications just right there on the page on a form instead of like, oh, we need your resume.
Reduces the friction.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
You invest in it and then, it's not, a lot of people say, oh, well, I built my pages, but nothing's happening. So drive traffic to it, right? You do have to spend money on driving traffic to it. And, you're not always hiring, but you are always recruiting. You're always looking for people.
Maybe just explain that.
So it could be that you might not need a certain position and your coaches know when that person is needed. Peer groups know when that person is needed usually. Oh, you need this person now, right? But, it could be that you're recruiting for a position that you already have filled. Again, just so that you have options. And it's not like this massive, conversation every time. It's just, hey, I love your application. I think it could be a great fit here. We're not quite ready, but when we are ready in a few months, can we give you a call?
Yeah.
Or, hey, Can we take you out for lunch and just have a chat and just keep this relationship going? That's what recruiting, it's networking, right? You're just making connections, having good conversations, and creating just a nice list of options.
What are your thoughts on the training part of this? Like, how much should we be spending? What do you think is important? What do you think is a waste of time? We can't just expect everyone to have all the skills we need. There is a training component to these businesses. What do you see separates sort of high performers from low performers on this?
So when you do get a good stable of good people, right, and you have, you know, you're spending, I don't know, $1 million, right? $1 million on your labor portion in your business, right? Usually we suggest that whatever that number is, you're taking at least, you know, good sort of baseline is 1% to 2% of that labor investment. Whatever that number is, you're taking 1% to 2% of that and you're putting the that budget towards training and development.
Okay, so $1 million, you're spending 10 grand on.
10 to 20.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, a conference, it could be some classes, it could be you bring a trainer in, but you're doing something.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people are just kind of sloppy or complacent about this. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, 10 to 20 on a million is very modest for you. Great. Right? That's retention. But I think as a baseline, that's a good guide.
Next on your list is defined roles. So, well, first of all, maybe just define what we mean by defined roles. I mentioned it briefly at the beginning, but you probably have a different view on what we mean by that and why it's important.
Yes. So when we are talking about defined roles, we're usually discussing things like, you know, very well-defined org structure with deliverables, 3 to 5 deliverables per role. We have an employment agreement for each role. We have GS&R holding tension to that employment agreement in each role. And we have team huddles. We have all these things to get clarity on that in the day-to-day. We've got this tech stack that makes sure everyone's organized, right? There's a lot of components here in defined roles. The reason it's, you know, not number one, you know, or the reason it's a little bit later is because, you know, I think a lot of small businesses actually thrive because they have generalists involved, right? We're always like very excited to get specialists. Mm. But a lot of times as a small business owner, to be flexible and to be, you know, able to pivot quickly enough, like having some really driven, skilled generalists
can meaning be, people who can wear a lot of hats, a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of this other thing, a little project management, a little bit of sales, and they can do some admin too. Mm-hmm. But we would make the case at Breakthrough Academy that that doesn't really scale.
True. Yeah, right.
So when does that modality of hiring, we just want smart, hardworking people, need to change into, I actually need like highly specialized people staying in their lane.
Mm-hmm. So usually, you know, it's kind of funny. It's this chicken or egg thing, right? Because usually generalists get you to specific levels. And then at a certain point, you reach the size and growth where you do need specialists in different things. And I think that's where like a coach or a peer group comes into play and says, okay, you're in that 3 to 5 million range as a GC with an average job size of 300K to 500K. We should definitely be thinking about a full-time estimator. Mm. That's a lot of situations. If you start going down that road, right? But in the meantime, yeah, I think a lot of people are very excited to get specialists. I think what's most important when it comes to, you know, defined roles is people working and living and thriving in their strengths. And that's you as a business owner. That's your people, right? You know, if you've ever done one of my favorite assessment tools on this is Clifton Gallup, their strengths finder. Mm-hmm. They spent like $10 million just researching the questions to ask. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good gauge of where people should be thriving, right? That's what we want. And, you know, it's such a hard thing because we're always saying like, well, this is the role. We need to fill the role with a human. And of course, that's ideal, right? But humans don't necessarily work that way, right? There's a lot of nuance to an actual human being. Right. And I think we're, you know, we are obviously like trying to build systems and trying to like fit people into their right roles. I think foundationally, the most important thing is you have 3 to 5 SMART goals for every role in your company. Mm-hmm. You have incentives attached to those goals. And they could be pretty basic, but just an incentive attached to those goals. Everyone's aligned, right? Everyone sort of sees, okay, we're all chasing the same thing here. And this is what will happen, or this is the benefit when we get there, right? And, you know, it's easy to get very corporate and, you know, be very formal with all of the agreements and all these crazy amounts of details, which I think are great. It's mm-hmm. always good to have expectations in writing because it's hard to hold the attention to otherwise, right?
Very.
But I think that, you know, once we set up 3 to 5 SMART goals for every role, we've kind of, you know, as we grow, we recognize, okay, we need a specialist in this area. The generalists keep growing with us. Usually they become like oftentimes higher level management, maybe GM one day, right? We groom them into that. But yeah, we eventually realize, okay, we actually need specialists here. And then we hire those specialists. And then building the comp structures that actually attach to those 3 to 5 SMART goals, that is
the tricky part.
The tricky part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think people get a little ahead of themselves on is this whole idea of deliverables and performance pay, and I want to create bonuses. You need to understand, it's not obvious actually. All those things sound good on the surface. It takes quite a lot of craftsmanship to figure out what the goal should be, how that thing gets measured, what is that worth to you in terms of a bonus as a business, what is it worth to the individual contributor enough to motivate them to do it. So I think people actually get too cute, too fast with this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And you end up creating you spend a whole bunch of time creating largely confusing and meaningless bonuses that people, you create infighting because you have people paddling in different directions for different things that they want to have be bonused on. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a very, very powerful concept, but you need to be patient and do it when your business is ready. It has adequate tracking, so you're not going to get into a labor dispute. You're not going to end up in HR law, an HR court because you get in a payment dispute with someone. I just say absolutely yes to it, but approach with caution and be very cognizant of the risks.
And keep it really simple.
Simple.
Yeah. My favorite example, Corey and Jeff, Vancity.
Yeah.
You've had them, you know, spotlighted a couple mm-hmm. times. You know, all they kept it really simple. They just said to all their staff members in the field, they said, hey, we're going to give you $1,000 a quarter. And so we worked on this one together and we're going to give you $1,000 a quarter, but every time something like this happens, we're going to ding you.
Yeah.
It should be like a penalty, just like professional athletes get penalties.
Right.
We're just going to hit you with a, hey man, sorry, you forgot to fill in that report, $50. And it's not like, we're not dinging your pay. This was a
dinging
gift
the bonus.
We are giving
yeah.
to you.
Yeah.
And we're just going to ding that. And it's
worked really well.
Dude, like, so it works because
people hate losing money more than they like getting it.
About 10 times more.
Yeah.
So like, it's a, hey, we're going to give you this gift. Every time some of these things aren't done, we're just going to ding you that gift.
That's awesome.
We're not diminishing your pay. We're not taking from you.
That's way simpler.
We get in trouble for that.
Yeah.
But every time we make a, you know, we have a big miss on some of these things.
Yeah.
And they've done a great job. Like, they made it fun. They made it funny because those guys are good at that.
Yeah.
Right. But every time we have a miss,
yeah.
just like, hey, man, 2 minutes in the box, you know, and we're going to give you $50. And people, we feel that, you know, that imaginary loss
yeah.
way more intensely than the $1,000
that we
as
might
a gain.
Get.
But it's, I mean, all these problems that people have with, you know, technician reporting and stuff like that, like, they don't have that. Pretty cool.
The last thing you have here on the list is project delivery. Now, I know you're not saying that delivering good projects is the least important thing. You're saying something else. You're saying that it's prioritized below these other things because why exactly? Because most of these contractors are good at it already?
I think that if you are in a service-based world, if you're not providing at least a good service and a good quality of project, you're not gonna grow at all.
Yeah.
to a place where you're real, you're a business owner.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be, you know, the colloquial term is chucking a truck for a long time, mm-hmm. maybe. But then as you do provide great service and you have, you know, quality behind your name, you start growing. The demand for your services keeps growing, and then you grow and you start hiring some people. And so that's one of the reasons. The other reason is if you are good at this, right? If you are, you know, if you're good at your craft, right, you're going to naturally reach a level of scale. But then the other thing that's generally the case is to get there, to understand the process, chances are some formal education has already got you there, right? A lot of, you know, tickets and, you know, diplomas, degrees, all these things, they tend to focus on a lot of this process-driven, you know, quality workmanship, check these boxes. A lot of education people have gotten has been kind of centered around this area anyways,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. right? So that's the reason that, you know, if it's getting, you know, it's kind of getting our 25% less. The other reason is project delivery and project management are a really good synopsis of kind of everything else along the way that could still need work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If, you know, your costing or your scope or your schedule or your quality or your profit are all kind of askew, you're going to find that out in this kind of area. And then maybe there's some other things you got to kind of revisit again. It'll identify a lot of things that you still haven't quite got to where they need to be.
When people come to us with like sort of project management, project delivery issues, what are kind of the top 1 to 2 things that we focus on? What systems make a big difference there?
Usually the tools in place to manage all the details aren't there. Because, you know, for a human to remember all of the emails they sent last week pertaining to project details, that's a pretty tough task, right? Tall task. So, you know, using technology wherever we can to manage details is one place, mm-hmm. right? I think another place that we typically go wrong is, you know, just costing out what our projection was versus what's actually happened,
mm-hmm.
and correcting for next time, correcting, mm-hmm. correcting, right? That kind of ties back to the financial controls, mm-hmm. piece, right? The other thing that, you know, a lot of people take for granted is their processes, even though like there's a standard of doing things in the industry oftentimes, there's still nuance to the way your business might do it.
100%.
Right?
Quite a lot, actually.
So Dudonis Construction, right? They have their way, right? And a lot of people, they kind of treat the download of those standards like this big mountainous task they'll handle one day,
mm.
when they have nothing but time and nothing but energy. But that sort of process download through Gemba Docs, and you know, you've had Tom Hughes on here and stuff, like that sort of download and improvement and constant improvement, the Kaizen mentality, that's like every week, piece by piece, little step by little step, just continuous progress and improvement. Don't build this monumental task that you're going to tackle one day. Make it a habit.
Mm-hmm. Did you like how valuable do you think that some of like the customer journey mapping or roadmaps or sort of multi-step project planning is? Like I've seen a lot of really cool infographics and flow charts that you guys have built with our members that you guys are getting a ton of really good feedback on. What role does that play in all this?
So to me, that's, you know, the foundation of good project delivery is knowing all of your steps.
Yeah.
Both the client-facing steps and then the internal steps. And you build the lists at the same time.
Right.
And the one that's internal is going to be way longer, yeah. usually, right? But you have these two sort of congruent flows, right. of work and who does what when, what's important, what does the client need to know, and what are we doing in the background?
Yeah.
And once you build those lists out, you can make marketable, you know, visual, strong visuals to show clients, and they often like that. You can't overpromise, because if you start putting steps in there that you don't actually do, then people are going to be like, what's going on? Where are you? Right? But if you kind of have those two things really well articulated on both sides, internal, external, that to me is the foundation of a really strong project delivery. Just downloading all that, and then sort of, you know, from there you build out all your procedures and improvements step by step, make it a habit, right? But that's kind of a great place to start.
So to recap here, you're making the case that everything starts with strategy and goal setting, financial controls next, optimized sales and marketing third. You're a sales and marketing org first, and a service provider second.
Mm-hmm. And in that, you know, we're very consultative. You mentioned that at the beginning.
Yes.
That's important. Like, I think we're not salesy. We don't like that stuff either, right? We're very consultative,
mm-hmm.
but we are like, that's our mindset, right? And we need to attract ideal clients with ideal projects at ideal margins, right? Not just anyone.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. To do that, we're going to need hiring and training. We need bodies, and we need good people and good minds. With those bodies, we need to define their roles so that they know what's expected from them. And then the sixth and final is really good quality project delivery so that customers are getting what we promise them on time, on budget, almost every time.
Mm-hmm.
Any closing thoughts when you think about systemizing businesses or the way that people should approach the contractor growth method? And any parting wisdom here, Ian?
So I would say that, you know, business is very fun. It's dynamic. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of situational aspects, right? I think that, you know, we're always going to have the unexpected come up, right? We're always going to have these random root problems in each of the six come up, right? I think what I'm suggesting here today is that there is sort of a general order of mastery, or at least proficiency, in each of these six. And there's plenty of wiggle room for hiring, for weaknesses in here, getting support where we need it. But to me, like, if somebody is focused on improving their sales and marketing, but they haven't got their pricing where it needs to be, they're always just going to go back to cash flow issues and be struggling,
yeah.
Right? If you go straight to improving your project delivery, but you don't actually have the financial controls in place to know what's happening and what's actually like targeted versus actual, like, what are you doing? You're just always going to come back to that. If you don't carve out the time to work on some of these systems, right, you're never going to advance any of them to where you want them to be, because you're always just going to be scattered,
yeah,
and lost.
Yeah.
So to me, this is just sort of like, again, the areas that are going to get 25% of your resource deployment at a time until they're sustainable and
but you can't take your eye off the ball on any of them.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the never-ending game of whack-a-mole.
It is. That's what makes business
kind of fun,
challenging,
kind of hard,
and kind of fun. Exactly.
Dude, this has been great. I really, really appreciate all the time, all the prep, all the thoughts on this. Love you, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
Of course, brother. Appreciate you.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.